Let's imagine trying to fix a broken society using trees.
Using trees, yeah, that's not usually what you'd expect.
Right, because normally when you look at forestry laws, you're expecting these dense regulations about, I don't know, timber yields and logging
Just a
permits.
giant spreadsheet of natural resources, basically.
Exactly, a purely administrative framework. But today we are taking a deep dive into the official text of South Africa's National Forests Act of 1998.
Passed right as the dust of apartheid was settling.
Yeah, and it is definitely not a dry forestry manual. Okay, let's unpack this because this act is actually a fascinating, like, radical blueprint for righting past social wrongs using the natural landscape.
It really is.
Our mission for this deep dive is to explore how this single document attempts this massive juggling act, you know, balancing environmental protection, commercial restructuring, and historical justice all at once.
And the whole foundation of that juggling act relies on abandoning the idea that a tree is just a tree. The law strictly categorizes the nation's portfolio into natural forests, woodlands, and commercial plantations. And it applies uniquely tailored rules to each one.
It operates almost like a strict financial planner. I
This is a
mean,
great way to put it.
yeah, like a financial planner won't let you just empty out your entire retirement fund to go buy a sports car.
Right, you'd be broke.
Exactly. And the act prevents clear-cutting ancient natural forests just for, you know, short-term timber profits. You have to live off the interest, the sustainable yield, while heavily protecting the principal.
And for natural forests, that protection is absolute. I mean, they cannot be destroyed unless there's some exceptional new land use with undeniable social or economic benefits.
Which is a huge hurdle.
It is. And what's fascinating here is how that absolute protection of the principal contrasts with plantations.
Okay.
The Act acknowledges that plantations exist primarily to drive the economy. So it sets up a framework where commercial timber can thrive, but without blurring the lines and, compromising those vulnerable indigenous ecosystems.
That strict ecological boundary creates an interesting friction, though, because forests aren't just biological vaults. They are social and cultural spaces too. So
Absolutely.
suddenly we aren't just discussing ecology, we're navigating human rights. The act guarantees the public reasonable access to state forests for recreation, education, and even cultural or spiritual fulfillment.
Which was a massive
It
shift.
is, but I have to push back here. Because if you mandate public access to vulnerable natural forests for cultural use, aren't you risking the exact ecological destruction that the first part of the act is trying to prevent?
Yeah, that's the big question.
Like, how do they stop these forests from essentially being loved to death?
Well, by not making it a blanket free-for-all, the state, or whoever owns the forest, designates very specific areas for access.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they retain the authority to limit numbers or restrict entry entirely, to prevent fires and protect sensitive biology.
So there are guardrails.
Exactly. The crucial shift is that cultural and spiritual use is now a legally protected baseline, not just an afterthought. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, we see the real power of this legislation,
Yeah.
which is community forestry agreements.
Right, because under apartheid, indigenous communities were systematically excluded from land ownership and forest
It
management.
completely locked out.
They were locked out of the economic benefits and their cultural heritage. So here's where it gets really interesting. How does the act actually reverse that historical lockout mechanically?
Mechanically, by creating a formal mechanism for communities with historical ties to the land to co-manage state forests.
Wait, they get actual management power?
Yes, the minister can enter into agreements that transfer management power directly back to these communities, and they can even waive rental fees.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, actively removing the financial barriers that past discrimination created. It's a direct redistribution of economic and management control.
To the people who are historically stripped of it, that is huge. So cooperative community management is the ideal mechanism. But I mean, let's be real, systems fail. What happens when a rogue developer or like an illegal logger targets a highly protected area? The law has to show its teeth. So what does this all mean for the bad actors on the ground?
The act brings down the hammer with severe categorized penalties. Chopping down a protected tree without a license is a first category offense.
Meaning what exactly?
Meaning it carries up to 3 years in prison?
3 years just for chopping a tree.
Just for a tree. It treats ecological theft as a major crime against the state.
That is a massive deterrent.
It really is. Furthermore, the law includes an aggressive emergency procedure.
Okay.
If a rare tree or woodland faces an immediate threat, The minister doesn't have to wait months for standard bureaucratic consultation.
They can just bypass the red tape.
Completely. They can temporarily declare a tree protected almost overnight simply by publishing a notice in local newspapers and airing it on the radio.
So it's a legal iron fist designed to move as fast as a chainsaw.
That's exactly right.
It's incredible to see how true environmental law doesn't just put nature under a glass case separate from humanity.
No, it can't.
It actively integrates human history, the economy, and ecology into one living system. We started by talking about trying to fix a broken society using trees, and it turns out the roots of justice and the roots of a forest are deeply intertwined.
It really makes you think, and it raises an important question for you, the listener.
Yeah.
If you were tasked with drafting a law for the natural spaces in your own community, how would you balance the sheer survival of the ecosystem with the historical and cultural rights of the people who live there?
Definitely something to ponder the next time you take a walk in the woods.